Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vaera. My personal big announcement for this week is that Baruch Hashem, with thanks to God, I can announce that my twins, a girl and a boy, were born to my wife, Josie, and to me, this past Sunday, December 26th. Everyone is doing well, and I'm just so thankful and appreciative that's the case. So now, back to the podcast news. This podcast this week is by Rabbi Michael Hatton. Rabbi Michael Hatton is a member of the Pardes faculty. His focus is Tanakh. And now, Rabbi Michael Hatton.
Thank you, Larry. Parshat Va'era, the genealogy of Moshe. Parshat Shmot concluded on a dire and desperate note, with the first attempt of Moshe and Aharon to free their Hebrew brethren having ended in abject failure. Pharaoh was utterly unmoved by their invocation of God's mighty name. He responded to their entreaties as only a dictatorial and imperious tyrant could, by heartlessly increasing the burdens of the hapless Hebrew slaves. Henceforth Pharaoh would burden them with gathering their own straw, with which to stiffen the consistency of the endless clay bricks. That day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters and officers, saying, "Do not provide the people with straw for bricks as earlier. Let them go and gather their own straw. However, you must place upon them the same quota of bricks as before. Do not reduce it. They are indolent and therefore cry out, 'Let us go to sacrifice to our God.' Let the work become heavier for the people, so that they will be occupied with it, and will not be misled by false ideas." The oppressed Israelites' brief and delirious reveries of freedom, earlier kindled by the unexpected arrival of Moshe and Aharon, who bore tidings of salvation in God's name, were thus cruelly dashed. The angry outburst of the Hebrew taskmasters, held accountable by the mercurial monarch for the failure of their tired charges to meet the tally of bricks, was not long in coming. They encountered Moshe and Aharon standing before them as they came out from Pharaoh's presence, and they said to them, "May God see what you have done and judge you, for you have made us despicable in the sight of Pharaoh and his ministers, placing a sword in their hands to kill us." As for Moshe, how he must have at that moment recalled the great reluctance with which he had initially donned the mantle of liberator, even as all of his earlier protestations and reservations were overruled by the unwavering God who had solemnly declared that, "I will be with you when you speak, and I will tell you what to say." Moshe's feelings of disappointment and failure, frustration and disillusionment were now palpable. "O God, why have you dealt grievously with this people, and why have you sent me? Since I have come to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has dealt harshly with this nation, but you have not saved your people." The first round of the uneven contest between the all-powerful God King and the invisible God of the Hebrews was thus decided in Pharaoh's favor, with the disheartened Israelite slaves and their well-intentioned but impotent leaders bowed and beaten. But timeless God, whose boundless perspective embraces eternity, was neither anxious nor dismayed. Soothingly, he calmed Moshe's concerns and vouchsafed to him a vision of eventual triumph, indicating in no uncertain terms that the day of deliverance was at hand. "Therefore tell the people of Israel that I am God. I shall extricate you from under the burdens of Egypt, and I shall rescue you from their labor, and I shall redeem you with an outstretched arm and with awesome punishments. I shall take you to me as my people, and I shall be your God, and you will know that I am God your Lord, who extricates you from under the burdens of Egypt." But though he may have convinced himself of God's sanguine promises, Moshe was unable to restore the broken spirits of his constituents. They did not hearken to Moshe because of their impatience and because of the hard labor. When God then asked Moshe to return to Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, in order to secure the release of the people of Israel, Moshe understandably responded with pained incredulity. Behold, the people of Israel did not listen to me. How then will Pharaoh hearken to me, for I am of uncircumcised lips? This first impassioned section of the Parsha ends here, followed by a long overdue listing of Moshe's lineage. This lineage list begins with Reuven, the eldest son of Yaakov, and briefly outlines the descendants of the first three tribes. But while the families of the first two tribes of Reuven and Shimon are recounted in just the briefest outline, the clans of the tribe of Levi are described at length. These are the names of Levi's sons in order: Gershon, Kehat, and Merari. Levi lived to be 137. The sons of Gershon were Livni and Shimi according to their families. The sons of Kehat were Amram, Yitzhar, Hebron, and Uziel, and Kehat lived to be 133. The sons of Merari were Machli and Mushi, and these were the families of Levi in order. Amram took as his wife Yocheved, his aunt. She bore him Aharon and Moshe, and Amram lived to be 137. The sons of Yitzhar were Korach, Nepheg, and Zichri. The sons of Uziel were Mishael, El-Safan, and Sitri. Aharon took Elisheva, daughter of Aminadav, the sister of Nachshon, as his wife, and she bore him Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Itamar. The sons of Korach were Asir, Elkanah, and Avi Asaf. These were the families of Korach. Elazar, the son of Aharon, took from the daughters of Putiel for his wife, and she bore him Pinchas. These were the chiefs of the clans of Levi, according to their families. These were Aharon and Moshe, to whom God spoke and said, "Liberate the people of Israel from the land of Egypt with all their hosts." They were the ones who spoke to Paro, king of Egypt, to take out the people of Israel from Egypt, none other than Moshe and Aharon. Chapter 6, verses 14 through 27. It will immediately be noticed that the above list is arranged in descending order by generation, with Levi's three sons, Gershon, Kehat, and Merari, followed by their respective offspring, listed laterally. It will be further noticed that it is the line of Moshe and Aharon that predictably receives the most attention, for it is only the lifespans of the patriarch Levi, his son Kehat, and Kehat's son Amram, the father of Aharon and Moshe, that are provided. Additionally, the list provides us with a critical detail that had not been indicated earlier. Amram took Yocheved as his wife. She was the daughter of Levi, and therefore his aunt. But what is most remarkable about this list is that, while it purports to provide us with the necessary genealogical background for Moshe, who has been designated by God as the liberator, he is the most understated personality in the entire passage. In fact, his name is mentioned only once in the listing itself, with no information concerning his wife, about whom we already know, or else his sons Gershon and Eliezer, respectively. Conversely, if there is anyone in the listing who seems particularly prominent, it is actually Moshe's older brother, Aharon. Aharon took Elisheva, daughter of Aminadav. She bore him Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Itamar. Elazar, the son of Aharon, took from the daughters of Putiel for his wife. Thus we learn that Aharon married a prominent woman. But Elisheva's brother Nachshon was none other than the tribal prince of Yehuda, based on Bimidbar chapter 1, verse 7. As for Pinchas, the grandson of Aharon, he would achieve prominence much later for his zealous defense of God's honor, Bimidbar chapter 25, verses 1 through 15, and would eventually succeed his father Elazar as high priest, as recounted in Yehoshua chapter 22, verse 13. It is the Rashbam who surmises that the list before us is deliberately selective. It only recounts those individuals that later play some sort of significant role in the Torah's narratives. We must therefore be informed about Kehat's other children, Yitzhar and Uziel, because Korach, the son of Yitzhar, will eventually achieve infamy as the self-appointed leader of an aborted rebellion against Moshe and Aharon, in Bimidbar chapter 16. Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Uziel, will much later be called upon to retrieve the dead bodies of Nadav and Avihu from the precincts of the Mishkan. After the latter offered strange fire on the occasion of the Mishkan's dedication, and therefore they prematurely perished. Vayikra chapter 10. The Torah is therefore anticipating our eventual need for this genealogical information by concisely providing it now. As the Rashbam himself relates. According to the straightforward reading, the Torah must tell us here the lineage up until Moshe and Aharon. As for Korach, the sons of Uziel and Pinchas, since they will be mentioned later on in the Torah, we are told about their genealogies now, so that we will realize who they are when they are introduced. Commentary to 6, verse 14. For the Rashbam, this fact not only explains the inclusions, but presumably the omissions as well. Though Chevron, son of Kehat, certainly had descendants, while the important priestly line of Eli at Shiloh was much later descended from Itamar, son of Aharon, neither of these personalities are explored further in our listing, since the chronology of the Torah itself attaches no prominence to them. Presumably, the Rashbam's interpretation also explains the curious omission of Moshe's own sons. For while Moshe himself is the Torah's central human protagonist, his sons do not inherit his greatness, and they fade into almost complete obscurity. While the merits of the Rashbam's interpretation cannot be denied, we note that the narrative nonetheless seems to construct a certain literary framework that tends to focus a spotlight on Aharon in particular. Not only does he marry the prominent Elisheva, sister of Nachshon, but Hassan Elazar also marries a woman of prominence and rank. These marriages mirror, of course, the earlier marriage of Amram to Yocheved, son of Levi. And the three personalities, Amram, Aharon, and Elazar, are thus bound up in some sort of a matrix of fateful importance, with Aharon at the center. Perhaps then, this genealogy is about more than prominent personalities. Recall that the build-up to the genealogy was the failed mission of Moshe and Aharon, the Israelites' intense disappointment in its aftermath, their taskmaster's smoldering anger, and Moshe's feelings of frustration and inadequacy. How he must have regretted being chosen by God to lead the people out of Egypt, a destiny that had anywise been imposed upon him against his will. Had he not tried mightily to evade that destiny by reminding God of his insignificance, by pleading ignorance of God's name, by claiming that the people would not accept him, by referring to his speech impediment, and finally by beseeching that someone else be sent in his stead? But all to no avail, for God would have none of it. So reluctantly Moshe had accepted his mission. But now his failure gave him intense pause. Choose someone else, he may have been thinking, as Pharaoh rejected his demands, his people groaned under their newly imposed burdens, and the taskmasters vented their indignation at him. In fact, Moshe may have said to himself, why not choose a natural leader, an eloquent speaker, and the elder and therefore more honored personality? Why not choose my brother Aharon? In other words, the genealogical list of our parsha may also preserve a subtle reflection of Moshe's own perceptions. Aharon is important. Aharon is prominent. Aharon is eminently more capable than I. Is it mere serendipity that this list is bracketed on either side by Moshe's protests and feelings of despondency? Is it mere coincidence that at every one of Moshe's low points, God reassures him by indicating that Aharon will be at his side to help? But while God identifies with Moshe's plight and acknowledges Aharon's abilities, he will not allow Moshe to surrender his mission to his older brother and thus to evade his destiny. The message for us is abundantly clear. While we justifiably tend to highlight the national dimension of the Exodus account, considering the matter from the perspective of peoplehood, there is an equally important angle that is provided by the personal saga of Moshe. His is the story of overcoming fear, of wrestling with failure, of trusting in God even when disaster is at hand and all venues have been seemingly exhausted. God will not allow Moshe to cast off his destiny, because what he demands of him and of all of us is to stay the course, to persevere, and to ultimately triumph. Understood in this light, Moshe's failure is actually an important milestone in the story of his success. For setback always provides us with important lessons, while also introducing the possibility of spiritual growth and development. Moshe may have attempted to conceal himself in the genealogy of our Parsha. Its concluding passage, however, leaves no room for doubt as to who was designated by God as leader. For as it ends, the prominence of Aharon is suddenly reversed. These were Aharon and Moshe, to whom God spoke and said, "Liberate the people of Israel from the land of Egypt with all of their hosts." They were the ones who spoke to Paro, king of Egypt, to take out the people of Israel from Egypt, none other than Moshe and Aharon. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Hatton. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.